The BAM we know today was to a large degree defined by Harvey Lichtenstein, its president and executive producer for 32 years. I spoke to him in 1999 on the occasion of his retirement from BAM. By that time, the image of the place had been transformed against all odds. Harvey had started there in the late 60s.
I remember when I took the job, Morton Baum, who I'd been working for over at City Center, said to me, "Why are you going over to the Brooklyn Academy of Music?" He said, "Those of us who are involved in the cultural life of New York City don't see any way out. It's not an institution that can survive." And I said to him, "Well, no one else is going to give me a theater to run, so I'm going to give it a shot."
After all, BAM was old by then. It had been around since 1881. Brooklyn was the poor relative of the supreme borough of Manhattan, and there was that famous psychological barrier against crossing the bridge. But Harvey had ideas.
I knew we had to do something that would be special when I came here and that called attention to the place and established an identity.
So, how do you establish an identity? As soon as he had the job, Harvey got in touch with the pioneering opera conductor and impresario Sarah Caldwell and booked her to bring three operas to Brooklyn, including Alban Berg's Lulu.
And, I mean, people like Leonard Bernstein and other things came to see Lulu. I mean, so right away, we did the Living Theater when they came back after 5 years of exile in 1968. The place was jammed, and we got a lot of publicity. In fact, a little too much. I mean, they wanted to march out of the theater onto the street without any clothes on. And the police said, "Well, you know, that's a problem." So I got them to not do that.
For less sensational productions, there were leaner times.
Merce Cunningham in the early years in a 2,000-seat house would draw 400, 500, 600 people, and it would break my heart because he's a very great artist, and I knew that. We were always on the edge, very often those early years, on the edge of the abyss, you know. Sometimes trying to get the payroll for that week was just a huge task. And we began to build up a reputation slowly but surely until finally in 1981... we started the Next Wave series.
The series began with a new opera by Philip Glass, Satyagraha, in Sanskrit, of all things. The story of Gandhi's early years in South Africa was a turning point for the Brooklyn landmark.
This was Phil Glass' first singing opera. He had done Einstein on the Beach before, but it's the first full singing opera that he had done. He'd been commissioned by the Netherlands Opera, and his management, the people came, they spoke to me, and they wanted to do it at BAM. And I remember we were talking about ridiculous amounts of money. This whole thing was hinged on maybe $50,000, you know. And Phil Glass' management came up with some, and I came up with others. We finally worked all that out, and I was wondering, because I said, "Phil, I mean, is this song in Sanskrit?" Yeah, it's in Sanskrit. "Don't worry, it's going to be okay." And, you know, we were taking a chance. Anyway, I went to Amsterdam to see the performance. And I liked it very much. I was sort of not quite into it yet. And then we got the tapes, and I brought it home. And I took my wife, and we got in the car, and I put the tape up. And we were driving to the supermarket. And we got to the supermarket, and she wouldn't move. She just wouldn't move. She wouldn't get out of that car until that tape finished. And then when we did the production, finally at BAM in September of 1981, I mean, it was a great event.
We did 5 or 6 performances, and there was an audience every night. Of course, he'd been working for that audience for 10 years.
Philip Glass.
You know, there's a whole history before that, and not to be overlooked by any means. But when we went into the Opera House with Satyagraha, that was a big hall. It was a public event, and there was a public for it. So that's what we saw.
When the Next Wave idea was expanded to make a festival in the fall of 1983, that clinched it for BAM's identity. For another BAM performer, Mark Morris, the strength of the statement the Art Center was making made it all worthwhile.
You know, it's either fabulous or horrible, or I'm the only person who doesn't like it and everybody else does, or vice versa. And that's always fun and interesting. You know, it's like, wow, I never thought I would want to go see this, and here I am, and I kind of like it. And, you know, he's done that to many, many people.
I would be down and out. I had to borrow money. I had to do this. I had to come in the morning in the face of, you know, we couldn't pay the bills, in the face of not selling tickets. And I just had to keep going on because I believed that what we were doing was important, and I just needed to make it work. And we finally did, you know.
To me, it was really about the audience finding its feet on the ground, finding a place, and coming, being able to come back year after year. You saw with Pina Bausch, you saw this with Laurie Anderson, you saw this with Bob Wilson. There is a large family or community of artists who were able to come back in a reliable way and where the audience could find them again. And Harvey certainly made that possible.
For Harvey and BAM at that point in its cultural life, it all came back to taking a chance, doing something that might lure reluctant culture fans to Brooklyn.
You don't have to be like BAM. Not every institution needs to be like BAM. They have to find their own character. But there has to be an openness to innovation, to newness. There has to be excitement by having an artist who all of a sudden shows you something you don't know. There has to be that in the mix. In the mix.
And now it is part of the mix. The avant-garde with the formerly avant-garde with the mainstream. Not to mention movies and cafes, and newly produced old works like the Three Penny Opera production I saw there last week, every seat filled. If Brooklyn is the place to be, BAM saw it coming a long time ago. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkill.